Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Hi, this is Tim Kirchin. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, August the 12th. On this date in 1963, Stan Musial announces retirement effective end of the year. For me, he's one of the five greatest hitters of all time. He has exactly as many hits at home as he did on the road. And in 1943, he had 20 triples and 18 strikeouts for the entire season. Think about that for a second. And today's birthday boy is Ian Happ of the Cubs. He and Dwight Evans are the only players ever to hit the first pitch thrown of a major league season for a home run. So happy birthday, Ian Happ. I'm filling in, of course, for Buster Olney, who is, again, fishing at Lake George. I'd love to see Buster in a boat with his cell phone at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sure that's what he's doing. I'm recording from my home studio in Maryland, and producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, how you doing?
I am doing great. It is excellent to talk baseball with you today. It's a nice respite from all of the ugly college football news that we got yesterday, really bumming me out doing my other podcast. So nice to join you and talk actual games, which is very exciting as always.
Yeah, well, that was a bad day yesterday for college football and for all sports fans. Let's hope it gets better. We'll see. Today, we'll be talking with Boog Chombi and Paul Hembekidis on today's podcast. And some of the highlights of today that we will discuss, of course, the suspensions were handed down for Sunday's incident between the A's and the Astros. A's outfielder Ramon Laureano was suspended for 6 games. He has appealed, and Astros coach Alex Cintrone got 20 games, the longest on-field transgression suspension in 15 years. Also, Indians pitcher Mike Clevinger missed his start last night after he broke team rules by leaving the team hotel and risking exposure to COVID-19. Teammate Adam Plutko has some strong words for Clevinger and Zach Plesac. And last night, the Indians' streak of 17 straight games, 4 or fewer runs allowed, ended last night. That is the second longest streak in history to start a season. Also yesterday, Yankees manager Aaron Boone announced that Giancarlo Stanton has a grade 1 hamstring strain, and his recovery time is likely going to be 3 to 4 weeks. Last night, the Blue Jays won on a walk-off in the first game in their new home in Buffalo. Everyone in Buffalo did a great job putting that ballpark together. Good for them.
The pitch to Shaw. Swing and a line drive. Base hit. Ball game over. RBI game-winning base hit by Travis Shaw, driving in Anthony Alford for a 5-4 walk-off win in downtown Buffalo.
Charlie Blackman, who we'll talk about quite a bit today, is 34 for 68. He's the third player since Ted Williams hit 400 in 1941 to have an average of 500 after 17 team games. Barry Bonds did it in 2004, Stan Musial in 1958. And finally, Orioles outfielder Austin Hayes hit an inside-the-park home run in extra innings last night, the first time that has happened with an Oriole since the team moved to Baltimore in 1954.
3-1. Hayes swings, lines this one in his center. Diving is Quinn. He can't make the catch. It gets past him and onto the track. Velasquez scores. Hayes keeps running. He's around second. He keeps going. Hayes being waved to the plate. Relay throw will not come forth. Austin Hayes goes all the way around the bases, and the Orioles take a 10-8 lead. Unbelievable.
Before we get to Boog and Hembo, check out the latest episode of the Woj Pod. I love basketball. Oklahoma City Thunder guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander joins Woj to discuss lessons learned under Chris Paul, his rookie indoctrination into the NBA with the Clippers, and Patrick Beverley, Canadian basketball, the AAU tournament feel of the bubble, and much more. Download and subscribe to the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boogs Shombi on Baseball Tonight.
And now we're joined by my dear friend, Boog Shombi. Hey, you're doing play-by-play again. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes, it's not the way we're used to doing it. It's basically like binging on Netflix. You're staring into a TV for 3 hours, but we're doing it.
All right. Buster, as you know, Boog, is at Lake George, and he's fishing. So I have a few questions for
you. Well, wait a second. You can't give away his location. I mean, Buster's a big deal. People will go vacation with Buster if you tell people where he is. What are you doing?
He's not that big of a deal.
All right. Fair enough. That's fair.
I shouldn't have done that. Sorry. Okay. So he is fishing, Boog. Have you ever caught a fish?
I have, actually. I have a great picture of me as a kid out on a boat, and I caught a flounder. Some say my body type is like a flounder, but I caught a flounder, and I'm holding the flounder and a can of 7-Up. And I am absolutely interested in what portion of our listening audience has no idea what a 7-Up is.
Love it. Yeah, every time I catch a bass, I put a Diet Mountain Dew next to it, which is a really good visual. Okay, number two, have you ever milked a cow?
Absolutely not.
And you would be terrible at it if you ever tried. Have you ever ridden a horse?
If I have, it was as a kid, so I'm going to go no.
Okay. Have you ever shot a gun?
I have shot a gun. Yes, I have. I've been to a range, but not for quite a while.
Okay. And lastly, have you ever successfully changed a tire?
Absolutely not. And I would like to add that if never started a lawnmower, if you locked me in a room with a decently sophisticated lawnmower, I'd never be able to start it and would have no idea how to mow your lawn. So there's that too.
So you've
but I can ride the subway.
Boog, my point about this is all of our writers, broadcasters, baseball guys, we don't know how to do anything. I stink at everything.
No, that-
And apparently you do too.
Sure. Well, no. So this is a running joke between myself and Dan Shulman, who's an incredible play-by-play guy. But just every once in a while, if we're in the same ballpark or we're hanging out, one of us, this has been for years now, constantly, one will lean into the other and go, what would we do if we weren't doing this? We can't do anything else. We don't know how to do anything. I mean, they wouldn't let us do anything else. So what the heck would we do? Right. And I'm like, yeah, it's a good point, man.
Yeah, we are the least worldly people in the world and the least effective people in the world. I understand. Okay, on to the real stuff, Boog, and not all of it is great, but we're going to go through it anyway. What did you make of the suspensions yesterday? 20 games for Cintrone, 6 games for Laureano.
I'm surprised. I actually thought they got it right. I think that this is a suspension about process in terms of, like, look, we can't have people fighting. Laureano was the one that actually reacted and charged, and we don't like that. But process. You can't have the coaches in the middle of stuff, and you can't speak to players on the other team that way. So, like, number one is the people that should be barking the most from the dugout, if there's going to be barking, it can't be the coaches. Like, it's got to be players. So you kind of got to zip it up a little bit. And then talking about barking at players, I'm saying. And then in terms of, you know, what he said reportedly, yeah, you can't have that either. So I thought that they got this one right. I was totally fine with it.
Right. And Boo, you got to acknowledge you can hear everything now with no fans in the stands. You should be careful anyway, but you have to be extra careful now, right?
It's a good point. I mean, you can hear a lot more. Again, I said it before, I did the Marlins for 8 years. So, you know, I've been in this setting at least a little bit, you know?
Okay. Mike Clevinger, Zach Plesac, both on the restricted list. Adam Plutko, teammate, came out and said, look, those guys lied to us, and they're going to really need to work to win back our trust. What do you make of the whole Indians situation?
I haven't asked anyone over there, so I'm just speaking from, you know, 1,000 miles away. I would just say that it's irresponsible. And I think that the first place you have to go is those guys don't get it. Like, even if you want to dismiss, like, just take it from a practical standpoint. Even if you're one of those people that wants to do that, the only, like, that the coronavirus isn't a big deal because you place risk only in, does it kill people, which in my opinion is stupid, because ask Freddie Freeman if he wants someone that he loves to go through that, or Tommy Hotovy, and on and on. But pushing that aside, the idea that you're putting at risk your team, that if you're in that setting and you go out and you get it, and then you go get on the plane and have the potential, you basically have the potential to shut your team down. And so it's really irresponsible, and it's really kind of saying bleep you to your team. And I just don't, and it's clearly a decision where you don't get it.
Well, to that end, Boob, the Cardinals have been shut down, and they haven't played since July the 29th. They're never going to get 60 games in with the time left in the season. What do we do with the Cardinals?
I think that as long as they don't have another shutdown, I think if the Cardinals by winning percentage are in a playoff spot, then the Cardinals make the playoffs is what I would say that we do. I think that's the way it has to be. It's a 60 game season. Like, we can't lose our minds over this one. I would also say it seems pretty clear that Major League Baseball is intent on doing whatever it takes to get to an expanded round of playoffs. Like, whatever it takes, we are going to get to 16 teams, 8 in each league, and we are going to see that happen regardless of if we have 2 more outbreaks, would be my prediction and perspective. So I think that to sit here, I mean, Timmy, you and I like to go back and forth on stuff. You're always thinking about it. But to sit here and really try and parse, like, can you really let the Cardinals in if they played 16 fewer games than everybody else or than a lot? Yes. Yes, you can. We're playing 60 games. Like, this is a bizarre season. Like, it will be okay. Right. It'll be all right.
These are extraordinary circumstances. We have to be adjustable and flexible no matter what happens. And I agree with you. Okay. Charlie Blackmon's hitting 500, Boo. 500. hundreds, yeah. 34 for yep. 68. I mean, what do you make of that first? And then what if he hits 400 this year? How will you view that in the history of the game?
Man, I don't know the answer to that. You got to give me a second. I had that game today, by the way. I'm doing with Chipper. I'm doing the Rockies and the Diamondbacks at a little after 3 Eastern, and I'm fired up about it. I mean, there's, you know, Tim, you love these numbers. His last 6 games, he's 17 for 23. That's 739. The best part of the fact that he's hitting 500, Timmy, he started the year 0 for 9. 0 for 9. So, and then the other part, the great Sarah Langs looked some stuff up for me. If you're wondering, I'm going to try and find it on my computer here. Yeah, so if you're wondering, the best marks of 15-game stretches – 1970, minimum 30 at bats. Jim Gantner in 1982 went 28 for 45. That's 622. George Vukovich in 83 went 24 for 39. That's 615. The one that jumps out to me is, and I remember this, Lance Berkman in 2008 hit 586. He had a 34 for 58 stretch. So over a 15-game stretch, his 567 isn't even in a top five. I am, by the way, going to be working with a guy who over a 15-game stretch in 06 at 548 in Chipper Jones today. So it's just cool how hot he is. If he hits 400, I think it'll be pretty amazing. I mean, it's not the same, of course, but it's still – look, you know, those numbers I just threw at you are pretty incredible. You know, like he's just getting hit after hit, and Charlie Blackman could hit, and he plays at Coors Field. So, I think it'll be really cool. Do I think it'll be the same as when Ted Williams hit 400? No, I don't. But it's an accomplishment. I mean, it's an accomplishment. Make no mistake.
Right. Well, speaking of Jim Gantner, by the way, when he played for the Brewers, he had a side business. He owned like a lube shop where people went to get their oil changed. And as part of an auction item for the Brewers, Jim Gantner went over to a guy's house one day and changed his oil in the guy's driveway.
Oh, my God.
While Jim Gantner was the second baseman for the Brewers. How great is that?
God, I can't. It'd be hard. I really want to stop this right now and come wherever you are and hug you, because like that is what I live for. Like that is such an amazing, awesome note. I can't even. An auction item, and we'll have the Brewer second baseman come and change the oil for your car at your house.
Right.
I mean, that's like off the chart.
You, of course, have never changed the oil before, correct?
No. God, no. Tim, I would sign something right now. I am a 50-year-old man. I would sign a notarized document that said, I never will drive a car again. I'd be fine with it. That's the truth. And, like, you, meanwhile, would, if they built just a big old bridge and I was like, Timmy, you want to drive to Portugal? You'd be like, let's go. And I'm not down for that.
Understood. Well, speaking of New York, Giancarlo Stanton is hurt again.
I was speaking of Portugal, not New York.
When
Tim,
you
sorry,
live in New York, you love the subway. You yeah, drive a car. That was a transition I was making.
I get it. But I'm in Bristol right now. I drove this morning to Starbucks.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. All right. I'm making this difficult. Go ahead.
So Stan's hurt again. He's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks.
Yep.
You know, they won 100 games with him playing 18 games last year. But, I mean, he's a different hitter this year. He's got a different body. What does this mean that he might be out for a month?
Nothing. For their team, nothing. It means nothing. I mean, I'm not taking a shot at him, but I will tell you this. we always overstate the win value of a single player. So, yes, they will be better. I would say you're right. He's swinging it better. But there are too many guys over, and this is such a small sample. I mean, what do you make of Yelich and Bellinger and the way those guys are swinging right now? Over a small sample, over 162, I got to tell you, I still think Christian Yelich might be the best hitter in the sport, but I don't know what's going to happen this year. So it didn't matter last year that they, if you look at their lineup, they lost Voit for an extended period of time. They lost Andujar for a significant period of time. They had Gregorius out. They had Hicks out. They had Judge out. And they basically didn't play. They played the whole year without Severino, and they were fine. So I to sit here and try and make it that injury will have really moved the needle on them, I'm not here for that. I don't buy.
Right. Christian Yelich, Boog, has 6 0-for-4s this year already. And he might be, as you said, the best hitter in the sport. This is why baseball is so good, because these things happen where no great NBA jump shooter goes 6 games without hitting a 3. It just doesn't
work
that way, because the skill involved in hitting a baseball is so difficult.
Yeah. I put it this way. The other thing that never happens in the NBA is, a guy who averages 20-10 and plays 38 minutes a game doesn't have a season where he plays 38 minutes a game and then just randomly averages 12-6. You know what I'm saying? He just had a bad year. In baseball, that'll happen, man. It does. You'll have a random bad year. It does not happen, injuries aside, or playing time cut in the NBA. It just doesn't.
Right. Totally agree. All right. Last thing, Boog. Look, I've been doing these games from home. I've done 6 games from my office where I am sitting right now.
Right.
What has it been like for you to do play-by-play when your analyst is not sitting next to you? He might be 3,000 miles away, and the game might be 3,000 miles away. I have found it incredibly fun, as always, but it has been wildly challenging. How have you found it that you're doing play-by-play, which you do better than anyone, but you're not sitting next to another human being? What's that been like?
I mean, look, I love it because I love it, but I don't like it. I think, part of what I like about my job is the connection. The connection to the people on the field, the managers, the coaches, players, obviously, but, front office people, and then the people that I work with, and I like having them next to me, and I like trying to facilitate good conversation and connection. I just do. I dearly miss working next to Chris Singleton. We worked together for 10 years, and, this is Chipper's first year, and I think he's got a chance to be great at this. I already think he's really good. But I wish I was next to him so I could, give him that feedback and just forge that connection that's just better in person. As far as the technical part of it, it's hard. There are stretches where it's not as hard. I think doing it with 3 people is uber challenging. But with 2 people, you can get into a little bit of a rhythm. But the technical part of it is still challenging. When I'm at the ballpark, the whole field's in front of me, so I can see everything. And the most challenging play right now is a stolen base or the wheel on a ball in the gap or a ball into the corner. And it's a situation where at the park, I get my choice of I have to call the play, swing, and there's a line drive into the corner. And now my eyes are in the corner and on the runners, but I have to talk and call it the whole time. And I'm just used to looking at the corner, talking, looking at the runners, looking at the corner, talking, voice around second. They dig it out of the corner, relay throw to the shortstop, voice at third, and going back and forth and back and forth. And now I'm looking at a program monitor that's cutting, the director's cutting the shots, and then I have to go look at an all 9 different monitor, which is quite small, not relative to what I'm used to. and try and identify where the runners are. And it's especially hard when there are multiple runners, fair fouls hard. And I don't want it to stink. I don't want it to stink. And so, you know, it doesn't feel good when you mess stuff up. And, you know, in radio and TV, I'm messing stuff up multiple times a game. So I know that for the most part, the people listening and viewing understand it. But look, it is what we love. And, you know, it's like this. I could sit here and do this with you for an entire day just because we love it so much. But it's just, yeah, it's challenging. I like the connection. I like seeing you in person. I like seeing the players, the people getting their stories in person. I said this. I was doing, you know, and this is a small one, but I was doing a Yankees-A's wildcard game a couple years ago. And this is just a small thing of what we can't do anymore. And it's not an earth-shattering story. And I'm going to curse, so you guys have to bleep it out, okay? So I'm standing behind home plate before the A's and the Yankees wildcard game, and I'm talking to Brian Cashman. And as I'm talking to Brian Cashman, Billy Beane walks up. And I know both gentlemen, you know, for a while. And you think about Billy Beane and how people perceive him and Moneyball and all that stuff. And the Yankees have certainly gotten into it. And Billy Beane interrupts the conversation by saying, "What's up, Cash? You guys going to out analytics the shit out of us tonight or what?" And then I waited and I asked Billy if I could tell the story. And he said, absolutely. But it's that stuff that you get to, you know, so here's the guy that the book Moneyball is based on. And he makes up that funny joke, basically saying, yeah, I know you guys use that stuff too. And it was just a funny moment. And it's those moments that I love collecting, whether I'm there as an observer or asking a question. That we just can't get nowadays. It's how you get the Jim Gantner story. So I know that I've taken forever to answer the question, but I miss culling for information in that regard. Because there's a connection, and just delivering that 10-second story that I was there for, I think helps make the broadcast better, and it connects people to Billy Beane, to Brian Cashman, to the Yankees, to the A's, and to baseball.
Amen, Boog. Bottom line, there is no substitute for human interaction, and there is no substitute for being at the ballpark. And we don't have that now. And I think we're all praying everyone gets healthy enough that we can do that sooner rather than later. So, Boog, thanks so much for joining me today. I'm going to be watching you and Chipper today. First, I'm going to go mow the lawn and then change the oil, but I'll be done.
Watch the game. All right. Will you do me a favor? Will you send me a selfie of you in front of the TV watching the game during the game?
I will do that if I can figure out how to take a selfie with myself in front of the TV. I'm challenged on everything.
Okay.
You know that.
All right.
But thanks, Ken Boone.
I love you, buddy.
All right. See you soon. See Bye.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And now we're joined by Paul Hembakides, research extraordinaire for ESPN. Hembo, how you doing?
Good morning, Tim. It is a pleasure to hear your voice. And like I said, it is about time that we had a real host on this podcast. It's been way too long.
Hey, I have a question for you first. I want you to rank the greatest hitting combinations in history for me, okay? Ruth and Gehrig, Mantle and Maris, Aaron and Matthews, Hembakides and John Fisher. Which is the greatest combination of hitters you've ever seen? You can tell the truth here.
Well, Hembakides and Fisher is certainly one, and that is easy. We absolutely obliterated pitching in ESPN Softball League for years, won championship after championship. The dynasty that we formed is unparalleled in the history of baseball, and that goes without saying. After that, I think the order is probably Ruth Gehrig, then Aaron Matthews, and then Mantle Maris. But I think the only thing I know for sure is that we're number one.
All right. Well, that's what I understood. I'm glad everyone now understands it. Also. All right, Hembo, on to big things now. What do you got on Fernando Tatis?
Tim, he played his 100th career game on Sunday, and through that time recorded 30 home runs and 20 stolen bases. No one had ever done that before. And Tim, there are two things that most stand out to me about his start to this season. The first is the damage that he does when pitchers challenge him. On pitches inside the strike zone, Tatis has put 39 balls in play and produced 53 total bases on those swings. The second, Tim, is his maturity as a defender. In 83 games as a rookie, Tatis made 18 errors, and 13 of those were throwing errors. He has yet to make a single error of any kind this season on 58 chances.
And that's kind of the point, Hembo, isn't it? This isn't some big, hairy guy who just hits homers. He hits leadoff. He can run like the wind. He's a great defender. And he's doing all this home run hitting, too. I mean, isn't that the key, is the position he plays?
Correct. And I think a lot of people jumped to some conclusions last year because some of his metrics defensively graded so unfavorably. But like you said, we're talking about legitimately one of the best athletes in all of baseball, someone that hit 93 on a throw across the diamond yesterday. So we know he has the arm. We know he has the actions. So there is no reason for me to believe, based on 83 games as a rookie, that he's not going to be able to stick at shortstop. I'm going to need to see it for a lot longer before I'm willing to move him away from that position.
Okay. Charlie Blackmon, what do you have?
So his 500 batting average through 17 games is even more impressive when you split it. Tim, he's batting 643 against lefties. He's batting 528 against fastballs. And he's batting 491 when even or behind in the count. Now, his average is more than twice the major league average of 235. That's on pace to be the lowest mark in a season in history. The current record, if you will, is 237 in 1968, which, of course, necessitated the lowering of the mound. So, Tim, given his current pace for at-bats, Blackmon would need to hit 360, that's 62 for 172, the rest of the way to own a 400 batting average at season's end. What chance would you give Charlie Blackmon to do that?
All right, he's not hitting 400. Nobody's hitting 400 in 60 games. The pitching is too good. The velo is a joke. The secondary, I don't know how anyone ever gets a hit against some of the pitchers that we see today. Now, quickly, Hembo, let's say he does hit 400 and somebody asks you, who's the last man to hit 400? How are you going to answer that?
The last man to hit 400 will be Ted Williams. All I will say is this. Obviously, you're right. The pitching is extraordinary right now, but he does have a few things to his advantage. Obviously, the really, really hot start helps. The fact that he's playing in Coors Field where the batting average on balls in play really helps. And of course, you know, only having to do it now for about 40 more games also helps a lot. So of course, it's not legitimate, but considering the environment in which we play, if someone were to hit anything close to 400 over a 60-game period, it would be a truly great feat, even though it wouldn't be anything close to what Ted Williams did in 1941.
Okay, I covered Warren Spahn in his prime. What do you have on him?
Well, it was this week in 1961, Tim, when he won his 300th game, and he would go on to win 63 more. And that just provides me an excuse with you on the podcast to share some of my favorite anecdotes about him. That win total is the highest of the live ball era, which dates, of course, to 1920, despite Spahn not winning a single game before the age of 25. And that is because Spahn lost 3 years of his career to World War II, during which time, Tim, he was awarded both a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. That makes him the most decorated ball player in the war, which I feel like a lot of people don't know. Spahn once said, and I emailed you this earlier this week, after what I went through overseas, I never thought of anything I was told to do in baseball as hard work. You get over the feeling like that when you spend days on end sleeping in frozen tank tracks in enemy-threatened territory. The Army taught me what's important and what isn't. And I just have to say, in doing some research on Spahn recently, I so enjoyed reading not just about his career, which was extraordinary both in his effectiveness and its length, but the fact that there was so much more to his life than that.
Right. And as you know, he might be the most durable pitcher in Major League history. He routinely would throw batting practice in between starts. Occasionally, he'd make a relief appearance. And I'm close on this. He had almost as many complete games after he turned 40 as Curt Schilling had in his entire career. And that's a compliment to Curt Schilling. He's one of our horses, but it just shows you how durable Warren Spahn was.
Oh, no question. He obviously credited much of that durability to his mechanics and his unwillingness to sort of max out, which is very much the antithesis of what you were saying. We'll never see a Warren Spahn again because no one's ever willing to throw 92%, 93% as hard as they can. Over the course of, I mean, Warren Spahn over the course of about a decade averaged nearly 23 outs per start. That is completely unheard of in the game today. You mentioned the complete game total and the way in which he was able to keep his body in shape. He's obviously sort of ahead of his time there and really turned pitching into an artistry when you consider how he changed speeds and mixed his pitches. But a real fun guy to study. And I figured that you would enjoy that having covered him the way that you did.
I was kidding about covering him in his prime.
And so am I, Tim. So am I.
63, not 93. Okay. What is your tip of the cap today?
So it was with great joy earlier this week that I learned that my former colleague and weekly friend of the podcast, Sarah Langs, is going to be in the booth calling the Nationals-Mets game tomorrow, Thursday, with Brian Kenny and Cliff Floyd. And I want to mention it for a few reasons. I was hired at ESPN a little bit before Sarah was. And I remember as soon as I met her, she struck me as someone who loved baseball practically as much as anybody that I had ever met and loved the work that she did practically as much as anybody that I had ever met. And to be chosen for such a thing, especially at such a young age, is a truly extraordinary thing, Tim, for two reasons. And I'm hoping that Sarah's inevitable success will inspire a lot of young women in sports to know that they can do the same thing. And I watched her along the path sort of along the way here. And the second thing is that I hope that her inevitable success will open up the door for more writers and analysts to someday be able to occupy the play-by-play booth. Because for the longest time, of course, and you've obviously been an exception to this rule as well, but a booth has been fairly sacred. It's been a play-by-play guy and a former player. And it doesn't have to be that way. And given the yearning that the public at large now has for information and the amount that we have, there's a real chance that someday the play-by-play booth looks a little bit different than it has traditionally. And I think Sarah and other people like that could go a long way in making that change. So if she's listening, Sarah, I would just say that we're on the bleachers rooting for you and we'll be watching.
Right. So by the way, Embo, I used to host Baseball Tonight, the Seamhead edition, for like 4 years. And I used to tell the bosses, we need to have a segment with a researcher every week because those guys, those women are so good at this. They love the game so much. And I was told by the bosses, we're not putting any researchers on TV. Well, now we've got researchers on TV, on podcasts, and now we have Sarah Langs in the booth, which is going to be great. And by the way, I checked with the Elias. I am no longer the smallest person to do a game in a booth in the live ball era. I checked with the Elias. Sarah is smaller than I am, so she will break the record in many ways when she does a game tomorrow night.
That's so great. So next year when I get my 2021 edition of the Elias Book of Records, I will see that change being made. Your name will be erased. Sarah's will be added. And unlike you, though, she had never had the chance to cover Warren Spahn.
Right. And last thing, you, Sarah, me, John Fisher, we're going out one night. We're going to talk about baseball for like 5 hours. I'll pick up the check. You in?
I am in. You just tell me when and where.
Okay. Thanks, Hembo. You were great. See you soon. Yep.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Tim Kirkshin, Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. And I thought before we did the Bleacher Tweets, we could do a little bit of getting to know Tim Kirkshin outside the baseball sphere. I have a little sounder for it.
Getting to know you.
First question for you. What is your ideal vacation as we sit in our homes and dream about vacation? Where would you go if you could go anywhere, Tim?
Well, I'm not a big vacation guy. I have a lot of trouble relaxing, but I would like to go to Australia because I've never been to Australia. So, and I've never been almost, I've been to like 58 major league parks, but I've never been to Europe. I've never done anything good. My whole family's done all this. I never get to do anything because I'm always watching a Pirates Reds game somewhere, but I would like to go to Australia. I would like to play golf in Australia and just see what that country is like. So that would be my ideal vacation.
Got it. Next up. All right. So you're going out to dinner, whether it's in your own town or just let's call it a generic American town or city. What kind of food are you honing in on if you're, you know, examining your options? Are you big into Italian? Are you a Mexican guy? Are you going to go burgers or like a standard American fare restaurant? Where are you zeroing in on?
Well, I love food, and I'm the least picky eater of all time. I eat anything that is put in front of me because that's the way I was brought up. Every vegetable, every fruit, I love. To answer your question, I would go Italian first. I love Italian food. I would order probably baked ziti, which, by the way, I can make at home.
Nice.
I do all the cooking at home. I stink at cooking. We pray after we eat when I cook at home. But I love to go out to dinner. I just don't get to do it very often. And I went out the other night for the first time to a restaurant and sat inside for the first time in 5.5 months. It was great because I didn't have to cook.
Wow. Where'd you go?
We went to a Mexican place. Nice. And the Laredo Grill, and it was fantastic. So if you serve it on a tortilla, I'm going to eat it no matter what it is.
Love it. Let's go to the next one. You had a lot of downtime without baseball. What were you watching? What were you reading? How did you fill that void in your life outside of your daily baseball minute that you were doing?
Well, I watched every episode of Columbo, which is the greatest non-sitcom in the history of television. I love that show. I know every line from every episode, and the way he catches the villains is just fascinating to me. And I watched every episode of Get Smart, which is the greatest sitcom of all time, which, of course, you wouldn't know, Taylor, because it went off the air like 25, 30 years before you were born. But it's the favorite sitcom of all time. So I watched a lot of Columbo. I watched all the Get Smarts. And then I binged watched The Office, which was hilariously funny. And Michael Scott is the single stupidest TV character in the history of television.
All right, two more for you. What is your least favorite sport?
Well, look, of the major sports, I don't understand football anymore. I like to watch it, but ever since they went to the bubble screen, I don't even know what I'm watching anymore. The nickel package has me thoroughly confused. And as much as I like football, it's my least favorite of the four major sports.
Got it. You pine for those days. The old Maryland eye, the three running backs stacked on top of each other, run it up the gut. I get it, man. Last one for you today. You're a lifelong Marylander. I got to ask, do you like picking crabs?
No, I find it tedious. I really like it when somebody picks out the crab meat for me and turns it into a crab cake, which I can eat. I used to go out with a woman from Baltimore. Believe me, I don't say that sentence very often. I used to go out with a woman, but she taught me how to pick meat out of a crab. And it got so tedious after a while, I just said, can we eat something else? Because I was so bad at it because it requires fine motor skills with my hands, which I do not have.
Did she sound like this? Hey there, Timmy. Let me show you how to pick some crabs. We're going to go to this nice place down in Dundalk.
We're going to go down the ocean.
Down to the ocean, get some crabs. All right, that is getting to know you.
Getting to know you.
Let's do two baseball questions here before we go. Corey Rukert writes in, will Major League Baseball set a minimum number of games to be eligible for playoffs with some teams way behind in overall games played? Where do you stand on this a quarter way into the season?
Well, the Cardinals have presented a very difficult issue here, and I think baseball is going to have to strongly consider a minimum number in order to qualify for the playoffs. Now, what that number is, I don't know, but let's just say every team plays 60 games, which is highly unlikely, and the Cardinals play 39 games, and that's, I think they're going to play more than that, but I'm not certain. Is that fair? Is that unfair? I think we're going to have to come up with a minimum number. I think it has to be at least 40, maybe 50, because winning percentage at 39 games or so just isn't the same as the winning percentage at 60 games. So baseball is going to have to invent this on the fly, as they have so many other things.
Last one for today. We've gotten this question a number of times. Our friend Sanzier asks, is Major League Baseball going to start suspending players for violating COVID protocols? Where's the Players Association on this? What do you think about this? A lot of people thinking this should be a thing, especially if they're suspending players for throwing balls at Astros.
Yes, I certainly understand the point here, but I don't think players should be suspended for testing positive, because we just don't know enough about this disease. You can do everything right, from what I can tell, and still get infected. So to blame a player when he really did nothing wrong, and I can't say he did nothing wrong, but I think we have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's fair to suspend a player for that. And I don't think it's fair to, like, make it a forfeit if the team can't play a game. I've heard that before also, because it's not necessarily the team's fault and all the players' fault. So this is a very thorny issue, but I say we shouldn't suspend players for testing positive, because again, it might not be their fault at all.
That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks for being a good sport, Tim, and it was fun working with you. I am off on Friday, so you will be in the very capable hands of one Troy Farkas. And we'll have you back to host. Buster's off a couple days at the end of August, so maybe we can get you back in the door then.
Well, thanks for all your help, Taylor. I would have never have been able to get through the technology of this without you. So thank you.
Anytime.
And that's all for today. My thanks to Boog, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.